From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 8th day of October 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, U.S. EPA is planning a new atrazine and human health study. The House of Representatives has finalized its budget for agriculture, and the newly named Minister of Agriculture for Japan is visiting Washington, D.C. this week. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear the latest on Diplodia ear rot from University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley. And don't forget that at the end of the half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast, and that it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at $4.74, up 10 and 3 quarters. The March at $4.93 and a quarter, 10 and a half higher. The May at $5.07, up 11 and a half. December Kansas City wheat at $4.89 and 3 quarters, 9 and a half cents higher. December corn futures, $3.64, 4 and a quarter cents the gain today. March contract up 4 at $3.76 and a quarter. May corn, $3.84 and 3 quarters up 4. July at $3.92 and a quarter, 4 and a half higher. And September futures at $4 even, up 4 and a quarter. November soybeans, $9.36 up 24. January at $9.39 and a quarter, 22 and a half higher. March at $9.40 and 3 quarters up 22. And the May at $9.39 and a quarter, 20 and a half higher. July soybeans, $9.39 and a half, up 18 and a half, and the August at 9.38, up 19 cents. October soybean meal at $302.70, $12 higher. October soybean oil, $34.28, up 55. October live cattle futures today, 35 cents lower at $81.87 and a half. December, though, up 25 cents at $84.32 and a half. October feeders, $93.97 and a half, 62 and a half higher. And the Novembers were up 62 and a half as well at $93.80. October lean hog futures today, $51.02 and a half, 12 and a half cents higher. The December futures were up $1.77 and a half, finished at $53.52 and a half cents. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, November contract, $71.69. Settlement price today up $2.12 a barrel. Ethanol for the November contract at $1.83 and 8 cents. That's 1 and 8 cents higher. November natural gas at $4.96 and 3 cents, up 5 and 9 cents of a cent. RBOB gasoline up 5 and 3 cents at $1.77 and 4 cents. November heating oil diesel fuel $1.83 and 6 cents, 5 and a half cents higher. Propane futures at 99 cents even, 3 tenths of a cent higher. And the gold futures today at $1,055.40, up $12.10. And that's the settlement price. The Dow now at 9,799 is just about 74 points higher on the day. The U.S. dollar at 75.96 is down 0.52. And the CRB index on the afternoon is currently trading at 263.91. That's 5.5 higher on the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. A flash flood watch in effect for portions of central into southern Illinois through tomorrow morning or early afternoon. A flood watch is in effect for southern Illinois from this afternoon through tomorrow afternoon. And the flood watch is in effect for most of central and southern Indiana from late this afternoon or this evening through tomorrow afternoon. So, in northern Illinois tonight, cloudy, scattered light showers. In northern Indiana, cloudy, periods of rain. In central and southern sections, cloudy, rain, and thunderstorms with areas of heavy rainfall. Lows this evening will range from around 40 in northwestern Illinois to 65 in the far south. And then tomorrow, in the north and central sections, cloudy, some periods of rain. In the south, rain and thunderstorms, heavy rainfall likely. Highs tomorrow from 50 in northwestern Illinois to 67 in the far southern part of Indiana. More on the agricultural weather forecast at the bottom of this hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
How are you today?
Oh, getting along pretty good.
I have to update something I talked about yesterday during the cash grain segment, which was the skunk in the office area yesterday afternoon. they issued a work order, and it did get moved away. So the skunk is now gone, but the smell is still just really, really bad. So I'm back over here at the radio station rather than my Mumford Hall office today.
Why did that skunk get in there?
You know, it didn't get in all the way. My office is work zone central in Mumford Hall. They're rebuilding an HVAC system. I'm in the basement, and they're putting a new HVAC system for floors above me. And they do have windows that are open there that are gone. They're usually blocked. The skunk was down in one of the window wells. But holy smokes. That stuff just, it gets into your clothes. Well, most folks in the agricultural world will know. It just gets into everything. And I'll probably have skunk for a month. The good news is I can drink skunky beers now and not have to worry about it, right? Okay, so let's talk about something else that's skunky. The weather's really bad. And it looks like there's going to be a freeze, if not this weekend, in the next set of cold air sometime in the next week that will finish the season off for corn and beans across the Midwest. And we've had quite a nice little rally in the marketplace. What are you hearing from the elevators that are feeding ADM at this point? How much damage do they think is can be done to the crop if there's a freeze out there?
Well, we're a little uncertain. I mean, you talk to a lot of differing agronomists, and they do different studies in that. We just don't know yet if we're going to see that much damage or not. I mean, I think that depends upon area. I'm sure some of the later corn that was planted, if it does get real cold here next week, there'll probably be some, but I don't know if we could really even give you an idea yet.
Who's been the buyers in the marketplace?
Buyers, as far as buying goes, there's not a the problem we have in the market right now is logistics, of course, this rain here, the slow harvest progress has got the logistics all screwed up, because you've got people that, you know, had scheduled trains to come in to fill up with corn and to get it moved out, so they're having to cancel trains or pay the penalty. You got some elevators, you know, offering half off on storage or drying if you bring it in. So the problem we're going to get into is that all you're doing is pushing a bigger problem down the road. And I suppose somewhere here down toward the end of the harvest, it's just going to be an absolute mess trying to handle this crop, try to get it moved from one location to the other location. So the logistics, the weather is sure playing havoc here with the logistics and trying to move corn, you know, into the end-user market or export market, wherever it needs to go.
Some of the early corn has come in. Are you getting a differentiation there between corn after corn and corn after soybeans and diplodia and disease that might be in it? And I ask this only because I talked to producers about that. They seem to think that there is. And certainly later in this program, we'll hear from Carl Bradley, and I did that interview this morning, and there is some difference between the two. I'm wondering how much of a difference. Were you able to check?
No, I can't get I've really never asked that second question, is if it was coming from corn after corn or after beans. I really can't tell you whether or not there is a difference, or if it's more pronounced in one or the other.
You know, I guess the point is, when USDA comes out with its numbers in the morning, will they be bigger or will they be smaller? Will the acreage be adjusted? What are your thoughts?
Well, probably all of the above. Well, I think you have to, at least from the yield reports that we've heard, you have to feel that there's room for the number to go up.
Right.
The other thing is that I do believe there's enough evidence out there that test weights are probably on the light side. So that does take away from some of this big increased yield that everybody's been hearing about. As far as acreage adjustments, when October comes around, you always want to put your seatbelt on for an October surprise. Now, whether or not we get it this time around or not, we just don't know. But I know that there's enough discussion around that feels that, you know, USDA may be a little high on the Illinois yield, on planted acres, and we'll just have to kind of see on that. I don't look for anything dramatically shocking, but, you know, I've also been around enough October crop reports that I'm ready for about anything they throw at me tomorrow morning.
And then what are your so do you have a number you're working with?
Well, I think you have to look for, the going up into that 163, 164. I think there's room to do that. I don't know if we can go up to those bigger numbers that I think USDA will take their time doing that. That's why everybody gets into this, you know, big crop keeps getting bigger. The USDA just kind of takes their time climbing to that until they get their stocks report done in December 1st and then kind of walks backwards and tries to make an acreage adjustment or harvested acreage adjustment and yield and try to fit everything together for the January report.
I guess at this point it's just sort of hurry up and wait for 7:30 Central Time to come tomorrow then, isn't it?
Well, the market, I guess there's been enough talk, or at least I feel that there's been enough talk about these big yields that unless there's a real shocker, I don't see that really being a major factor tomorrow. I mean, the market is working two factors right now. Number one, a collapsing dollar, making new lows, new 14-month lows, and unless something comes along to shore up the strength of the dollar, we're going to be right down against last summer's lows fairly quickly. So I think you're going to hear a lot of news talk about a currency crisis in the complex, and that is what's lifting all raw commodities higher, because as the dollar weakens, it takes more dollars to buy a barrel of oil, it takes more dollars to buy a bushel of corn and a bushel of soybeans. So that's the key force in here today. The other thing, of course, is the harvest problem. We just can't there's a vacuum here underneath the market because the harvest started a full month late. And even though, you know, the September stocks numbers show like a 1.7 billion bushel corn carryout, actually the corn carryout's only about 700 as of October 1 because we're using a billion bushels of corn a day. So, you know, everything's been pushed back, so you do have a vacuum underneath this market. That's the same way with soybeans. Even though USDA increased the carryout number for September 1, we got a much smaller supply on hand, and then with harvest delays, just prolonging that, and that's what's kind of ratcheting up this market. So those are your two key factors. Unless USDA throws us a real dandy, I think we're going to be trading weather and currency values right away.
Anything else that you want to add before we let you go for the day?
That's all I have.
Okay, thanks much, Dan. Dan
Very
Zwicker
well.
Is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report, and that happens each and every Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Rebecca King in Galesburg at 309-341-5007. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Dave Dickey's here with them. Ag News for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, the Environmental Protection Agency says it will initiate a new study on atrazine's effects on human health. The agency says it will be looking at recent studies on atrazine and its potential association with cancer, birth defects, and other non-cancer health issues. It is unlikely changes in the atrazine label will affect the 2010 spring application season. The U.S. House yesterday passed a final bill for fiscal year 2010 agricultural spending totaling $121.13 billion. It includes funding for increased oversight of domestic food, assistance for dairy farmers, money for school food programs, and $13 million to help stabilize Iraq and Afghanistan. Japan's newly named agriculture minister is in Washington this week, during which time he is scheduled to meet with both U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. High on the agenda of both meetings is U.S. insistence that Japan reopen its market to all U.S. beef. USDA announced on Wednesday that enrollment for the 2010 direct and countercyclical programs and the average crop revenue election program has begun and will continue through June 1st of 2010. The deadline is mandatory for all participants, and USDA says it will not accept any late filed applications. And soft drinks and snack maker Pepsi says today that its fiscal third quarter profit rose 9%, in part on cost control efforts. The maker of Frito-Lay snacks earned $1.72 billion, or $1.09 per share, in the 3 months ending September 5th. That's up from the $1.58 billion, or $0.99 per share, a year ago. Sales slipped 1% to $11.08 billion from $11.24 billion. Sales were hindered by a weakness in its Pepsi America's Beverages unit, which reported a 6% drop in volume and a 9% revenue decline. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, a conversation I had this morning with University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley. It's all about diplodium.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Let's begin our conversation, Carl, by defining just what diplodia might be.
Well, it's the diplodia ear rot is the name of the disease. It's caused by a fungus. It overwinters in stubble of the previous corn crop. So really, we always have a lot of inoculum around because there's always a lot of corn stubble around. But what was different about 2009 is all the frequent moisture we had, especially right before silking and sort of throughout silking till, you know, about 3 or 4 weeks past silking, which is kind of the critical period for infection to occur. And so we really had just really great conditions for this fungus to do a job on a lot of the corn that's out there. So we're seeing it worse on fields that were planted corn on corn, but conditions were so good for it this year that we can find it in at not as high levels, but on corn that was planted in the soybean stubble as well.
Okay, so two things. One, it shows up. Farmers understand that probably. They probably ought to be able to identify it in the field if that's possible. And two, how much of a yield hit do they take from diplodia?
Okay. Yes. First of all, it's important for people to go out and look for it now, even before they get out there with the combine. Because if they have a problem, and if they have crop insurance, they need to know if they have it. And then if they do, they need to contact their crop insurance agent as quickly as possible, because there may be some kind of documentation that may be needed. As far as yield loss, the biggest thing it does is it reduces test weight of the kernels. But then, of course, so you could get docked for lower test weight, and when you go in with severely affected corn, you're going to get docked because of damaged kernels as well. And if it's really badly infected, lots of times the cob will also rot, which makes it difficult for the kernels to separate. And so you'll also have a lot of foreign matter in the grain as well, so which would add another level of dockage on there. And by the end, you could almost end up owing the elevator money if it's a really bad case. So that's the biggest thing about it, is it reduces test weight and then all the dockage that comes along with it.
And then test weight gets impacted by how much?
Oh, quite a bit. There can be very light kernels because of this infection, so it could drop several points. It just depends on how bad the infection is.
And the other reason that you need to get out and scout, really, is that once the rain subside, producers will need to get into those fields probably earlier rather than later, because it can spawn stalk rots, right?
Well, the same fungus also causes a stalk rot, and the two are basically unrelated. Just kind of depends on where the infection occurs. But it's important to, I think it's important to get those fields maybe harvested first and get that grain dried down to below 18% for short-term storage. For long-term storage, you'd want it below 15%, because this fungus can continue to spread even in the bin. So getting that moisture down quickly is pretty important.
All right. And unlike Fusarium, diplodia is not toxic when fed?
Not that we know of, at least in the U.S. There have been some reports in Africa and South America. Some of those reports are not real clear if there may have been other fungi in the kernels that were fed in these studies. But not that we are aware of in the U.S. Or in North America, where this fungus, we're not aware of any problems with feeding it. However, other fungi can move in after diplodia has infected. And some of these other fungi might be Fusarium or some others that can produce toxins. So in any case, I think it's always important to have moldy grain checked by lab for mycotoxins before it's fed to animals. And there's different labs that can do this. The Centralia Animal Disease Laboratory can do this as well, and there's probably a few others.
Was there anything a producer could have done to prevent the development?
Well, the conditions were so great this year that they might have. There's no way they would have had a 100% disease-free field this year. It was just impossible to do. But if thinking about diplodia for next year, one of the things they can do is pick a hybrid that's going to have a little bit better resistance. Seed companies do rate for diplodia, and so there's ratings available. I guess if we want to be optimistic, the good thing about a year like 2009 is that seed companies and growers can probably identify a few hybrids that they might want to avoid next year, and maybe and hopefully be able to identify some that look like it resisted diplodia a little bit better this year. So corn on corn is always going to make it worse. So if you can rotate out of those fields that have severe problems this year, then that would be a good thing.
And that's Carl Bradley. He's a University of Illinois plant pathologist talking about diplodia. Back in 2 minutes with the Ag Weather.
It's National Fluffer Nutter Day. The marshmallow cream sandwich is especially popular in the northeastern United States. Emma Curtis, co-owner of Snowflake Marshmallow Cream, may be the creator of the Fluffer Nutter. In a 1914 recipe leaflet, she mentioned peanut butter as a complement. On this day in agricultural history in 1871, the Great Chicago Fire broke out and destroyed over 17,000 buildings and left almost 100,000 people homeless. It was usually blamed on Miss Kate O'Leary's cow kicking over a lamp, However, in 1997, the Chicago City Council looked into the evidence, both new and old, and passed a resolution exonerating Mrs. O'Leary and her cow. Many still believe the cow is guilty. In 1906, Harry Day was born. An American nutritional biochemist, he helped develop the fluoride additive used in toothpaste. By the way, the original patent was held by Indiana University. Day also researched the health aspects of food ingredients, principles of food safety, and nutritional requirements of phosphorus, zinc, fluoride, boron, and iron. And in 1919, Congress passed the Volstead Act, which enforced the ban on the sale and consumption of alcoholic beverages. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On the line with us today is Pete Levitt. He is a meteorologist here to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Pete. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Todd.
It is wet here, and I suppose eventually it will get cold enough to freeze. Do you still think that's going to happen this weekend, or will it have to wait for a second blast?
No, I think we're going to get it on Sunday. At least, let's say from about the northwest third of Illinois westward, and it's going to end the growing season throughout the northwestern Corn Belt. It's very cold. The difficulty with the local forecast is that the contrast between the air not too far to the west in Iowa, where temperature will get down in the 20s on Sunday morning on Monday, and we have northwestern Illinois where we'll get down to freezing, I think, but I don't think it'll get into the 20s there unless the system pushes a little bit further to the southeast. In any event, it's a premature end to the growing season for all of the northwest Corn Belt, and that's something worth discussing. But first, let's take a look at the immediate weather. We've got a lot of rain in the southeastern half of Illinois, and there's going to be some flooding down there, especially along and south of the I-70 corridor, where it looks like 2 to 4 inches of rain and maybe some locally heavier amounts as it continues tonight and tomorrow. So some flooding down there, that isn't good. And then when the cold air comes on Sunday, we see temperatures to freezing about along a line from Chicago to just west of Champaign, then maybe westward over towards Moline and then southwestward from there. We've got temperatures Sunday, Monday, or Wednesday in the 20s and much of the western and northern portions of Iowa, all of Minnesota, the Dakotas, Nebraska, Wisconsin, northwest Kansas, eastern Colorado, that whole area there, that will end the growing season there.
Well, it'll end the growing season there. And then is there a second cold air blast that will probably finish the rest of the Midwest off?
Yeah, that's coming. It's a little bit uncertain as to how that's going to work out. There'll be a pause after this first shot, and while it pauses, it means it's waiting for another weather system, another rain system to move on through Illinois and then northeastward from there. And then behind that, I think we will get the high-pressure system, a secondary cold front to come down, and that will probably start to end the growing season, at least down through the northwestern half of Illinois, and most of Michigan gets it either this Sunday or then and into Indiana. So it'll only be the extreme southern and eastern portions of the Corn Belt that won't see that freezing temperatures. And we're not talking about, for the Western Belt, Todd, we're not just talking about light frost. We're talking about a hard freeze. And that's going to be a problem on not only stopping the growing season, but reducing the rate at which the crop can lose its moisture. And this is a very late crop, as everybody knows. We have some, I think it was 10% of Illinois didn't have the corn crop dented as of last weekend. And it's going to be a very wet crop when it freezes.
Indeed it is. Thanks much, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Leavitt, he's meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.